This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
And joining us now is ESPN's football journalist, Ante Jukic. Ante, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. Glad to be on.
Ante, we've got you on to talk about your article about Katrina Gorry, but firstly, I'm sure you heard our discussion there about Alexi Lalas. What do you think of the Arda Hedegaard case that's really started off this whole Women's World Cup in controversy?
I'm in agreement with you, Josh. I think considering Hedegaard's decision and the principles that led to that decision, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think there's a this is a generational issue. However, I guess indicting that is of us as a society. But in terms of her stance and how she seeks an improvement, because it's not necessarily just a criticism; it's a constructive criticism for the women's game and football as a whole, and even as society as a whole. I think there is something positive that can come from this, and the fact that she has acted on her principles, not in spite. I think it's a positive thing.
Well, speaking of principles, let's talk about Ante Milicic's principles. He's been a little bit maligned for his philosophy, what he's brought into the Women's World Cup. A lot of calls for, you know, that Stajic would never have lost that game against Italy. And the high line seems to be the trending topic on Twitter. What do you make of the blowback against Milicic so far?
I think it's misguided, to be honest. And you can't look at this game in isolation. You have to look at the games, you know, the Matilda's preparation games, and I look at the New Zealand game. Just because there was a different scoreline doesn't mean that complexion was different in terms of how Australia played. There wasn't a very incisive or penetrative manner to which Australia played in phases of possession. It's just that in comparison to, let's say, the past week, the Netherlands and Italy were far more effective in pressing Australia. The nature of our midfield movement has always been the same, let's say, since Milicic has taken over. And even with respect to Stajic, I think it's just ignorant. Considering how, I guess, susceptible Australia were in midfield as soon as Gorry became, like I said in the piece, she shifted to the periphery under Stajic eventually, and that was something that was seen in the Asian Cup as well. I find it to be a bit misguided.
Well, break it down for the people then, Ante. How does Gorry's presence in midfield sort of link to this high line discussion and why Australia was vulnerable against Italy and against the Netherlands?
Well, like, as I wrote in the piece, I think Milicic and his coaching staff have desired an Australian team in phases of possession to be very spread out. And it's a concept that can be a bit abstract in terms of football, but they don't defend with the ball very well. Because, one, they don't really put numbers around the ball. A lot of players work in isolation because they are so spread out. And so if you do lose the ball in certain positions on the field against more compact defences, which is what defences generally do, they try to make the pitch as small as possible, you're then susceptible when you lose a ball. And because you're so spread out, you have an inability to then compress the pitch because you've tried to expand the pitch so much. And this is something that I wrote with respect to Gorry and this, I guess, attacking ideology. It seems incompatible because she's not someone who covers a lot of ground quickly. She's someone who is explosive within the first, you know, 5 metres, and that needs numbers around the ball, and that needs players who are more capable in tighter spaces on the pitch. And it was, I know it's, look, I'm making a comparison to men's football, but I think it's something that what Max Allegri said about football has kind of resonated with me in April. He talked about the footballing public kind of not underestimating the practicality of football, and now expecting change with Gorry would, by extension, expect such a dramatic shift in attacking focus. And I kind of think that's unrealistic, though.
Well, Milicic has gone with this, you know, literally expansive philosophy. I don't mean expansive in terms of you know, just being progressive in attacking, but also just trying to spread all the players out on the field and create space. But he's also gone with, at least in the first match, at number six, probably the most languid and slowest player you could imagine in Emily Van Egmond, which suggests that he doesn't really understand the risks that, you know, his tactics entail.
Van Egmond's a confusing one because she's very measured, let's say, on the ball. But the position she takes up on the pitch impacts what she can do with it. And sometimes she puts herself in positions of unnecessary risk or unnecessary discomfort on the ball, and it tries and it puts too much of a let's say difficulty in her trying to get out of certain situations. And I think her and Gori can work together, let's say, and that was evident, let's say, as others have noted in response to the piece, in the qualifications for the Olympics, they can work together. And I think in Gori's absence, it's kind of put, I guess, a certain pressure on Van Egmond to be able to create from the base of midfield, which is something that she seems not necessarily evident in doing. We lack, or the Matildas lack, a certain optionality going forward with just Van Egmond at the base of midfield. And now, considering Kellen Knight's injury, it puts even more pressure on her to create.
Where do you think Elise Kellenknight fits in terms of the team? Because hopefully, well, Josh and I both are in the thought that Elise Kellenknight should be in that starting 11. Do you think that Ante Milicic might bring her back into the fold for the next game against Brazil?
I think she will. And I agree. I think she should start. But then it's a matter of who misses out. And with respect to Gori, I don't think she's the one who would fit either. And it's a question of now, because he seems intent on Kerr being the pivot, and he still needs speed. I think maybe Ford misses out if Kellenknight is to start. But that's just my own interpretation.
Ante, what does your starting 11 look like?
In an ideal situation or in a kind of realistic situation?
Well, maybe more realistic in terms of, you know, obviously you've identified the problems that the Matildas have and have had for a number of weeks now, not just only here at the Women's World Cup, but also in their previous friendlies. A team that could take them forward to get out of this group and into the knockout stages.
That's a difficult one, to be honest, because now if you're expecting, in terms of how Milicic has implemented a tactical plan and how and the players he prefers in that implementation, honestly, I don't know if Australia get through the group stage. I know that's a kind of big call, but I see that as a realistic scenario. However, at the same time, if you start someone like Gori and Kellenknight, if you start both of them, that would dictate a dramatic shift in attacking points of focus. And then there's the other issue of, you know, Kerr playing as that central striker, which kind of seems incompatible with her own attributes. But, you know, I'd rather get paid for that take. look, I think Kellenknight and Van Egmond should start. But now whether who misses out of Yallop and Ford, I'm not necessarily certain. And if I had to make a call, I'd say maybe Yallop, because I think Milicic likes the look of Ford and Kerr playing together, even though, you know, Ford at the 10 seems a bit incompatible as well. In terms of midfield composition, if Kellenknight was to return, I think maybe Yallop misses out.
I think it's an interesting point you make about Kerr, because if you look at her club football, especially at Perth Glory, I mean, Despotovsky never plays her as the nine, almost never, unless, you know, Rachel Hill's injured. He always seems to play her off the left, coming inside, because then she can actually face goal.
I think Despotovsky and I are of a similar frame of mind. I think there's a, in terms of her playing off I think there might be a maximization of her attributes. And I don't know whether her playing as a pivot is an ideal usage of Sam Kerr. But, yeah, look, we need, I guess, more evidence and more time to be able to really come to a definitive conclusion on that situation. That can't be, let's say, do you run the risk of now, you know, having, let's say, confirmation bias?
Ante Milicic received a lot of criticism also about the substitutes he used in the game against Italy. What do you make about the players coming off the bench? Do you think that there's enough depth there?
I think there is depth. I think it's just because substitutions and decisions, like tactical decisions, are impinged by, or not impinged, but more directed by philosophy and you know what one wants out of a team or what one wants out of a result, let's say. Like I said, you know, in this morning's piece, like there was a lot to understand about Milicic's desire to have Devanna come on first instead of Gorry, considering the very significant problems that were happening in the midfield. I'm okay with Devanna starting, but you know, there are other options there, and they're just as dynamic at this stage of Devanna's career. They're just as dynamic as elsewhere. Like I said, Milicic's substitutions are directed by his own interpretation of the game, and I think there's a lot to question in terms of his starting side, you know, before you start thinking about his substitutions.
You said in the piece, Ante, which is available to read on ESPN, and everyone should go read it after the show.
Thanks for the plug.
Yeah, absolutely. What makes Gorry a unique footballer? Because you said she is unique in terms of her skill set in Australian football. There's no other player really like her. What does she actually do on the field that you see that actually, you know, relieves the pressure on the defence and does create opportunities for the side?
She's entirely unique, and it's kind of strange that such a player can emerge from such an environment that wholly misinterprets the value of a midfield. you know, that is Australian football. It's something that, you know, really fascinates me, the environment in which she grew up in, and the coaches that she had growing up. The manner in which she can operate in such tight space and get fouled where others would lose the ball, you know, for example, she's able to progress the ball just as well as keeping it. And that's one thing, you know, look, this is not exclusively an Australian footballing issue. I think there is overall a massive misinterpretation of what a midfield must do in phases of attack and the optionality that creates as a consequence. Be it male or female football in Australia, she's entirely unique, and she embraces risk, but she also has the technical capacity to be able to do it. She really is a joy to watch, but then again, this is my own personal and subjective side of watching football coming out.
It's a game of opinions, mate. Well, yeah. Katrina Gorry is a fantastic footballer. I'm with you on that. I think she should start against Brazil. Whether that makes a huge impact on the rest of the team, I think it makes some impact, even with, you know, the way Milicic is set up. But, Ante, that's just about all we've got time for. Thank you for joining us, and everyone go read your piece on ESPN.
Thank you very much for having us, and go Matildas.